This is the Wayne McLean Hotline. To join the conversation, call 433-3121. Outside the London area, call collect 433-3121. Call now.
Welcome back to the Hotline, your direct access to London opinion. This hour, we are very delighted and pleased to have with us on the live line the leader of the Liberal Party here in the province of Ontario and soon to become premier of the province, it appears, David Peterson. Good morning, Mr. Peterson.
Good morning, Mr. McLean. How are you?
Nice to talk to you again. Well, boy, you must be a busy man these days.
I'm reasonably busy, but I'm never too busy to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm delighted to be with you today for a while.
Well, we're going to open our phone lines in a moment, but Mr. Peterson, maybe we could begin and get right into this.
You can still call me David. You know, I always used to.
Well, thank you, David. I appreciate that. We, as you know, have lost our federal funding, or at least as a result of the freeze for the Pan Am Games bid here in London. What is your position on this, and do you, when you're elected, or at least move into the Premier's office, do you think that you will find a way to fund these games to make up for the federal loss of $37
million? Well, I am going to be having a meeting this Friday with a number of the proponents in the committee in London, and we're going to review that in some considerable detail. It's no secret that I'm in favor of the games, but I'm also in the position that I have to be very responsible about the public purse and how much tax money can go into these things. I have said that I don't think we needed tax money. I think it one should look at lottery funds to do this kind of thing. The question obviously will then be, well, how much?
Mm-hmm.
And there is not a specific figure. I would like to see a way to work this thing out, but there's absolutely no doubt about the fact that the federal initiative has really thrown the kibosh into this thing, and whether it can be resurrected or not, frankly, Wayne, I do not know at this point, but if we can find a way, I hope we can, but there's certainly no guarantees of that. It's a phenomenal undertaking, huge amount of money, and I have to always be mindful of my responsibility in that regard.
Would it be possible, David, though, to increase lottery winnings to the Pan Am people to make up the shortfall, or is that too large of a sum there?
Well, one always, one has many options in the circumstances, but the question is, what will that sum be? Could you justify $90 million of lottery funds going into London, Ontario? Those are questions that would have to be asked. You know, the lottery funds have to be dispersed fairly and evenly across the province. So there are many unanswered questions at this point, and I don't know the answer to that. I'd like to see what the committee has in mind. It's a very able committee, and if there's a way to resolve it, then we'll search for that way to do it. Maybe we can move to get the federal government to change their mind on this thing.
Or make a commitment of some sort, as I understand it, after the freeze comes off in 1990.
Well, things like this don't generally go through without multi-level support.
Yes.
of government. Obviously the municipality, which is on site, and the provincial and the federal government. It can't make these things happen, a world-scale operation happen, without that kind of cooperation. And if the federal government is backed off, then it's pretty tough for the other two levels to do it alone. It seems to me that now we've got to try to persuade the federal representatives to do what they can to look after London's interests.
You're expecting, along with Mr. Ray, of course, to topple the Tory government, I believe it's next Tuesday.
That's right.
What do you think of Miller's so-called fourth option here of choosing another Tory member to form another government? Do you think that that is a desperate move, or is it realistically possible?
It is a desperate move. I think the Tories have still not come to grips with the realities of May 2nd and what has in fact happened. They are trying to do anything they can to desperately hang on. But I think my sense is that Mr. Miller at that point was musing more than indicating a course of action. But in fairness, it's very difficult to get a fix on what the Conservatives really believe today. As you know, you can watch day to day, they've been changing their mind on almost everything. And I gather he said that one day, and the next day said he wasn't going to do it. So I don't take it as a serious proposal Wayne, and if he did it, it wouldn't work anyway.
Well, is there a chance, though, David, that this alliance with the NDP and the Liberals could be declared unconstitutional? I've heard talk about that.
First of all, it's not unconstitutional. Mr. Miller threatened a number of things along the way. To go to court, for example, was ridiculous. There's nothing to take to court. All of the constitutional opinion that I'm aware of, and these are the experts, with possibly one exception that I read in the newspaper, who's never been known to be a constitutional lawyer, said that there's absolutely nothing the matter with this. It's completely within precedent. It's been done many times before in different kinds of forms. Some of these things happen all the time, not always written down, but by understandings and agreements between parties. And there's absolutely nothing the matter with it. I mean, I quote to you, for example, the man considered to be the essential expert on these matters, Senator Eugene Forsey, thinks it's not only reasonable, sensible, but the correct approach to these matters. But there's only one man who will make that decision ultimately, and that is His Honor, the Lieutenant Governor.
But certainly Mr. Arad could call another election.
He could call another election.
He could ask you to form a party.
He could ask us to form a government.
Government, I should say.
In case he does.
Yeah.
Or he could call an election. And frankly, Wayne, if he calls an election, that's no problem either. We would happily go back to the people, because certainly the numbers today indicate that we would come back with quite a compelling majority.
Mr. Peterson,
I don't think that Frank Miller wants an election, in spite of all the bluster.
Just before we get to our phone calls here, David, just a couple of quick comments. You're still going to go ahead with the proposal about beer and wine if you get into the premier's office, beer and wine in corner stores?
That's something I would like to proceed with.
Even though the NDP doesn't seem to be that happy with it.
Well, obviously, if we are the only party that believes in something, and we take it into the House and we're defeated, it's not going to go ahead. Now, that's a reality of the minority situation. But Wayne, let me take you back for a minute. This minority that we have now is the third minority we've had in the last 10 years.
Yes, Mr. Davis, twice, 75-77.
We've only had, three out of four of the last elections have been minorities. So it's incumbent upon all of us, I think, to get used to dealing with these in sensible ways. The alternative is to run back to the people every time there's a minority, but then we could be having elections every 6 months for the rest of our lives and not get on with the legislative action. So what we really did in this accord was to search out the things that we had in common with the NDP. There's many things we disagree with about them. We don't want to nationalize INCO. We don't want to nationalize our resource industry. We're not socialists, and they're not liberals. But it's incumbent upon, I think, mature people to get together and agree on things they agree on and then proceed. Now we find the conservatives, after the fact, in their throne speech, agree with 99% of what we said anyway.
Except the extra billing.
Except extra billing and a few other things.
Yeah.
So we may have some fights with there, but generally they tend to agree with us. They've had this sudden conversion on the road to Damascus very late in life. Now, let's take the beer and wine issue.
Okay.
It's something I would like to see proceed, but if it can't proceed, if it doesn't get either the support of the Tories or the NDP, it will die. There's nothing I can do about it. And we'll try to proceed along those things. We will still be, if we are called upon, we will be the government. It will not be the NDP. It is not a coalition. And we will be charged with the responsibility of governing.
Will any of those NDP members be in a cabinet of yours, David?
The answer is no. The NDP are going to be the third party, an opposition party, and they're going to feel quite free to criticize. They don't want an election. That was one of the things that prompted them to make some kind of an arrangement. They desperately do not want an election. The Tories don't appear to want one either, because they're in some disarray. But the reality is also in this whole situation, Wayne, that the Conservatives went in and offered a virtual blank check to the NDP. They would have given them anything for the NDP support. We know that for a fact.
We're going to go to our phones now. David Peterson is with me on the live line. We appreciate his taking time out from a very, very busy schedule to be with you. The issues so far, the Catholic funding may be on your mind, the Pan Am Games funding, extra billing. We can also certainly talk about the election itself and what you think happened. and also questions that you have for David Peterson about the future of the province in the environment, job creation, the economy in general, whatever it happens to be, David Peterson is here to answer your questions. So let's go to the hotline phones now. Radio 98, Helen, you're on the air with David Peterson.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Peterson.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Wonderful.
The question that I'd like to find out from you is about the new building is going up for the veterans up at Parkway.
Parkway.
Yeah. Is that funded by the Ontario government?
Well, there's an agreement, as I understand it, between the federal and provincial government on the care of the veterans.
Just a little louder, please, David.
There's an agreement between the federal and provincial governments with respect to the care of the veterans. It's going to be turned over to the provincial government with some federal funding, but a lot of it'll be joint funding, federal and provincial, as well as private funding in that.
Now, another thing on that. Are there going to be any place for women?
You know, that's a good question.
Well, I'll tell you why.
Honestly, know the answer to that. I would hope so.
Well, I'll tell you why. I was in Ottawa in the Rita Veterans Home for 18 months.
Yes.
And the facilities there for women were unbelievable. And I would like
unbelievably good or unbelievably bad?
Bad.
Uh-huh.
Because there was only three women there. They're the only place in Canada that they hold the women.
Uh-huh.
And the facilities there for women were unbelievable. But I would like in Parkway here to have somebody that knows the needs of the women of our age, that they would put a part of a pavilion for the women, because there are a lot of women, well, like myself, that out there that would like to be in that home.
Well, look, you make a very good point, and I don't know the answers, but if I can help you in any way personally, can I give you my phone number?
Okay.
It's 433-6631 in London.
Uh-huh.
And if you maybe want to give me a ring, because this sounds like something that perhaps might need a little individual help, I would be delighted to meet with you and help you and with regards to your own personal situation.
Well, I'm not only thinking about myself.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, and I can check out the broad question, but also with regards to your own situation, maybe I can help you.
Helen, thank you so much for your call.
Good luck.
Okay.
Bye-bye. 433-3121 is the number to reach David Peterson. If you're outside the London area, from Windsor to Kitchener, from Sarnia to Hamilton, call the operator and we'll pay for it. Radio 98, Judy, you're on the air with David Peterson.
Hi, I just want to have a question for David Peterson. I'm sure he's aware of the hospital workers' plight.
Judy, can you speak up just a little?
Oh, sorry. I'm sure you're aware, David, of the hospital workers' problem in Ontario.
Yes. Which specific
one? Well, the service workers.
Yes.
And our contract is a year and a half.
Yep.
I just wonder, if you take over, do you have any plans of helping out with the hospital workers' delay in our contract?
Well, you know, and there are a number of other situations where in other areas where there have been some very long delays bringing on contracts and things. And although I can't tell you I have a specific plan to end that one, it would be my intention to move very quickly to resolve these outstanding matters. I mean, I find it quite inhuman to have to wait for that period of time. That being said, there are negotiations going on, but I certainly, my instructions would be to resolve these things as quickly as possible.
Well, I hope, because when the campaign was going full force, we had a PC candidate come to our door, and I told him in no way, shape, or form has the hospital workers ever forgotten what Mr. Miller did to us 10, 12 years ago, and what he's doing to us now.
I understand.
So, I'm really glad to see it.
It is my hope, Judy, in broad terms, to bring a different kind of an atmosphere to this province in terms of all of the groups getting along together, more sensitive and humane approach to some of these things. Now, obviously, at various times, there's going to be confrontation between management and labor. But we've got to get people working together, speedy resolutions, not letting these things be outstanding for so long.
Right, because it's really dragged on.
Judy, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
433-3121. David, just before we go back to calls and maybe some messages, speaking of hospitals and nurses, you and your party, along with the NDP, are opposing extra billing. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Now, as you know, the OMA, in a story a couple of days ago, is saying, look, we don't want this, and we're prepared to go on strike here.
Well,
and they also say, what's going to happen when we lose a lot of doctors who won't have this privilege? Also keeping in mind that there's, what, about some 12% that are extra billing?
I'm mindful of that, and I also understand that in these kinds of discussions, sometimes the rhetoric gets blown out of proportion to reality, and I'm aware of that. But I really believe, Wayne, that we can work out an effective and sensitive arrangement with the doctors. We don't approve of extra billing. We think it's wrong. It erodes affordability and accessibility of the system. I believe in the same quality of medicine for poor people as I do for rich people, and that's fundamental with us. That being said, I think we can work it out with the doctors. There are other provinces now that used to allow extra billing that are moving away from it. I'm told that Saskatchewan has done that, and I remind you also that this province is losing $50 million a year in revenue from penalties under the Canada Health Act for its failure to stop extra billing.
But we do have 3 years grace, though, don't we?
Well, this means we still got to end it. And if we don't, you're right, it was given 3 years grace to work the thing out, and the Conservatives have made no moves on the matter. As a matter of fact, during the campaign, Frank Miller made a big point of it. He wrote to all the doctors, say, please support us, send us your checks, because we support your right to extra bill. And so he's lined himself up on the side of one particular group. It's not my intention to have out-and-out warfare with the doctors, because they're...
Well, could you avoid the problem, eliminate the extra billing, but increase their fee schedule?
Well, there's lots of ways you can work these things out. Some of the fee schedule is quite unfair. Some of it is fair. I think we have to have a look at it line by line, and hopefully we can work out an accommodation with the doctors. I'm aware of the threats, but frequently in negotiations of these types, you do have these extreme points of view expressed. But I think there are many, many moderates and doctors, and certainly I've talked to a lot of doctors, some who violently disagree with me, but many who agree with me and are very comfortable with our approach.
We're speaking with David Peterson this morning on the live line from his office in Toronto. Our lines are all tied up now, so we'll be going back to your calls on the hotline when we return. If you are calling and the line is busy, please keep trying. We'll try to speak to as many as possible this hour on the hotline.
Wayne McLean wants your opinion.
You're on the air with David Peterson.
Good, thank you.
Art, how are you?
Yeah, David, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Dave, I was wondering, what your stand is with this Ontario Hydro extravagant carrying on that they've been into for the last large number of years.
Good question.
Here we have in Ontario Hydro a deficit in the province of Ontario of $30 billion. That's only $6 billion less than our federal debt.
It's $22 billion, Art.
It's 22?
Yep.
I've read it that it's $30 billion, but I'll change that. But even that is terribly ridiculous.
Well, it's more than the province of Ontario Consolidated Revenue Fund. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Now, I'm wondering, and I think in some of your campaign literature that you suggested possibly putting a watchdog committee on there to get
absolutely
that thing. You did say that.
Art, the problem with Ontario Hydro, and I could speak for the next 4 hours about it.
Yeah, good.
But the root of the problem is absolutely no accountability. I mean, they sit down there, with some people appointed to the board who tend to be friends of the government, doing their own bidding. There's no check on the system. They're not responsible to the consumers. They're not responsible to their owners, who are the taxpayers of this province, people of this province.
Mm-hmm.
There's no accountability in the system. That's where we have to start. There are a huge number of specific problems. Darlington, for example, one of the reasons we have this huge debt is Darlington is, it's supposed to cost about $3 billion. Now going to come in at $11 billion. I mean, just... figure that one out for planning.
That's right.
And there are many other things. The price of uranium, you know, some of the waste and duplication. They've written off close to $2 billion worth of hydro plants, you know, heavy water plants, and there really has been some monumentally bad planning. Now, in many ways, it's a first-class organization. I want to be fair. You know, I saw that storm up in Orangeville last. I was there the day after in Orangeville and Grand Valley. Those hydro guys were in there putting up poles, stringing the stuff up. I mean, just really moved efficiently and well, you know, within 24 hours. So there are good parts to it, but I think the planning has been bad, and we haven't had any independent review of the capital expansion program, how many plants we should have where and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I tend to favor generally a different approach to hydro, which is smaller scale development, more diversified, more emphasis on hydraulic power as opposed to nuclear, but nuclear is here to stay for a while at least. All that being said, there are many, many specific problems I could discuss with you. We need a counterweight. A committee to oversee this thing, as we used to have, but it was canned by the conservatives when I got the majority in 1981.
Yeah.
I'm going to resurrect that as soon as I possibly can.
Art, last word to you.
Yeah. I appreciate it. So you would really consider possibly getting away from nuclear power, if possible, and going back to wind or waters?
Nuclear is here to stay.
It's here to stay.
We have, for a while.
Yeah.
In the grand history of things, it probably is not the technology we'll have 100 years from now. And I see it, in a sense, as an interim kind of a technology as we move into other things, more renewable, benign forms of energy. But, it's 30% of our production now.
Yeah.
And you're not going to tear down these factories when you've got billions installed in them. Of course, just make them as good as you can. I'm not anticipating any major expansion in the nuclear. I put my expansion into other areas.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to leave it there, Art.
Can I give him one more shot?
We're going to have to leave it there.
I wanted to know what happened to the president of the Ontario Hydro here in the last few days. He resigned?
Yeah, Milan Nastage, who I knew quite well, resigned. I just read in the paper this morning.
Okay, Art, thank you.
Thanks a million.
433-3121 is the number. If you're outside of the London area, call us collect. Yes, David?
I just said it's too bad you're so tough.
Well, the lines are just blazing, okay, David. A lot of people wanting to talk to you, and we have some messages coming along. And we'll be back with more from David Peterson. Live line this morning with the leader of the Ontario Liberal Party, David Peterson, for all intents and purposes, soon to be Premier Peterson. David, one quick one before we get back to the phones. In your opinion, what did Frank Miller do wrong that cost him this government, or at least got such a small majority for him that it's unworkable? Where did he go wrong, do you think?
I guess that's a fair question. I should have been the last one to give him advice on these matters. But
just a little louder, please, David.
The Conservative Party just ran out of gas. You know, I think people, after 42 years, wanted a change. Mr. Miller had some dream that this was a right-wing, Reaganite kind of a province, and it wasn't. I never believed that. This is a compassionate, progressive society. I think the views that he and the Conservatives were expressing were out of sync with the mainstream, the kind of hopes and dreams and aspirations that people had for themselves and for their children. I think he had problems in the campaign, obviously, and the more it comes out that he wasn't informed of what's going on and that kind of thing, he wasn't in control, he kept changing advisors, was inconsistent almost every day, changed his mind from noon to 4 o'clock. And, you know, you can't just... Politics isn't easy, Wayne, and lots of people will disagree with a lot of things that I say, but many people excuse that. At least if you're, you know, forthright and honest, you say what you believe and you're prepared to fight for it. The Conservatives sort of completely fell apart in that regard. I think we were presented with an opportunity, and we had some luck. There's no question about it. On the other hand, I think we ran a reasonably good campaign, too. We were well prepared for it. We knew what we wanted to say. We knew what we believed in. We had an opportunity to put that before the people. So,
did the Catholic funding issue hurt the Conservatives?
Oh, they're looking for scapegoats, but it did not hurt them. Look, we supported it. We supported 1971.
Oh, I know. You've been calling for it for years.
If they were against it, because they knew where we stood as well. Now, they handled it very ineptly. I mean, I can't, when the history of this thing is written, you will see a harsh, harsh criticism of the ineptitude of the government. You know, that announcement was made almost a year ago, Wayne, and here, a year later, there's still no information on it, no legislation, no public hearings to speak of, you know, that kept all this information themselves. There's a lot of fear out there because people worry about what's going to happen to their jobs, to their schools, to their kids, to their community facilities, quite legitimately. And because they suppressed all this information and continue to, the anxiety level remains high.
Let me ask you one more thing before we get into messages and more calls here, and this will be our last opportunity because I'd like to have the callers take over pretty much from this point. David, would you let Morgenthaler operate in Toronto?
Well, I'm not a fan of Dr. Morgenthaler, and I don't think that we need freestanding abortion clinics. And I don't think that's the approach that we should take in our province. That being said, there are a great number of legal considerations. It is in the courts now. Probably the courts will ultimately pronounce on this matter. It's not a question of my will. We still have to respect the law of the land. We have a law under which it's been found that it's impossible to obtain convictions. That then becomes a matter for the federal parliament to express their will through a new law if they so choose. So I have to obey the law like everyone else in this province, but you ask me my opinion. My opinion is I am not in favor of freestanding abortion clinics.
433-3121, the number to reach David Peterson this morning on the hotline. Talking your language with Liberal leader David Peterson, for all intents and purposes, soon to become the Premier of Ontario within the next number of weeks. Government expected to fall next Tuesday. That's going to be on the throne speech, isn't it, David?
It's going to be on the throne speech. The throne speech was read by His Honor a week or so ago. There's 8 days of legislative debate on it, and then the vote.
Okay. Radio 98, Wayne, you're on the air with David Peterson.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'd just like to make a comment about the extension of funding to secondary schools. I'd like to express my support of your position, and I hope that things are in place by September. I think that for the kids' sake and the parents' sake, it would be good to have the stability at that time so the kids don't have to think about changing a school, for example, for the last couple of years of secondary school. And
well, certainly I believe, like you do, the time is of the essence. I don't think for a minute, given the late hour, that all the little details will be tied down. Some areas have already agreed mutually to postpone, you know, the transfers for another year. And I think we have to look at locally developed solutions to some of these problems, because each area is unique. Many areas have got along extremely well. I have seen some phenomenal local leadership. Other areas, there's bitterness, and it's not working out well. But I think we do have the obligation to everybody to have a full hearing and get the best brains in this province to try to make it work out.
David, how about the other schools, the other private schools? What are your thoughts on that? Jewish schools, Baptist, Christian Reform, what have you?
There is a commission now looking at that, chaired by a former Londoner, Dr. Bernard Shapiro.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to report, I believe, in the fall, and I'd be very, you know, I have an open mind since I'm willing to look at what he has to say. There are some real problems attached to that, and presumably he will deal with them. There are problems of the viability of the public system. There are problems of accountability, you see, in both the separate and the public system. Wayne, we have a democratically elected trustees who oversee these things, but they don't have that with some of these other schools.
Right, that's a good
point.
Yeah.
Keep that accountability. I mean, education is still the prerogative of taxpayers, and their leadership through the trustees. How do you do the definitions? Who's entitled to a school? I mean, I hypothetically escaped. The Jewish community wants their own school, fair enough, or Christian communities, that's fair enough. What about if the Moonies want a school? Should they be able to have one tax-supported? What about if the Nazis had one? I mean, what are the rules? How far do you go? What if some of the sects want a school that you or I may not approve of, but how do you exclude them?
Mm-hmm.
You see, we're into very difficult ground, and I don't know the answer to all of those kind of things. And
but it's not a black and white issue, though, as some see it.
But sure. The other reality is, number one, we have bitten off such a big bite with the separate school issue that must be digested first, so it's some time away if it's dealt with at all.
And secondly, we must not handle this issue as ineptly as a separate school of question has been handled.
Okay. Wayne, you have the last word here for David.
Right. David mentioned earlier that the announcement was made about a year ago, and there hasn't been any real firm statement about how things will take place or when and all that. I think that we would really look forward to David Peterson making some firm statements to give people a clear picture of what they can plan for and to relieve some of that anxiety that is present out in the schools and the community.
Thank you so much for your call, Wayne.
Thank you very much.
The phone now with Liberal leader David Peterson. Let's go back to the hotline phones. Radio 98, you're on the air with David Peterson.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Hello?
Hello, David. I know you.
Do you?
You have done many things for me. I really appreciate it.
Well, aren't you
What's
wonderful?
What's going to happen to our pension?
Well, I am very worried about that federal situation.
This is the de-indexing.
The de-indexing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that will cost pensioners about $100 next year and by $500 by 1990. It's going to drive a number of pensioners under the poverty line. I think it's a very, very serious mistake of the federal
government. I'm trying to keep my home
I understand the problems that you know, and I am going to use every device I have.
Would that include possibly raising the gain supplement?
There are many options that we have now to try to protect people, but you can see the dirty pool that the federal government is playing, you know. It's just like this to me, Wayne. You're saying, okay, the federal government's cutting back on the Pan Am Games, so we've got to make it up. They're cutting back on pensions, so that we've got to make that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they've got to carry their share of the responsibility in these ways. I mean, there's limited fiscal capacity for all of these kind of things, and I have to govern in a responsible financial context. But it's an area that I'm very sensitive to, and we'll look at every option we have to try to not see seniors suffer.
The thing is, they're taking it from the needy and giving it to the greedy.
It was Robin Hood in reverse. They're stealing from the poor and giving to the rich. I mean, and look at the money. They have this $500,000 capital gains exemption. I'm telling you, I don't believe that'll create one job. It'll just favor a very small 4 or 5% of the people that have capital gains anyway. And they're getting that money from pensioners, I mean, at least part of it. I think it's fundamentally wrong in terms of taxation philosophy.
Caller, let me thank you for raising the issue.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Radio 98, Len, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Go right ahead, please.
Good morning, David.
Good morning. Who's that? Gord?
This is Len.
Oh, Len. Hi, Len.
I have a couple of questions to ask you. One is, I understand that you're still remaining firm on this sale of liquor and beer in other than the brewer's retail and liquor stores directly to the public.
As I said, I believe in it. I think that Ontario's come of age. I think it's time to break up the monopolies. I think it's time to serve the consumers. Now, that just because I believe in it doesn't mean necessarily it'd get through the House. It's something I hope we could get through the House, but you never know.
Well, I'd just like to point out that I know of at least one store in the Northern Ontario area where this works out very well.
Well, good.
And what I'm suggesting that the tourist season is upon us, and it's not just Northern Ontario that benefits from it, but around London and so forth. But I believe that, like some other provinces, that we should be able, over the bar, in different licensed locations to sell beer or liquor, but particularly beer, for people to take to the rooms or to take with them.
Well, look, I appreciate what you're saying. I appreciate your support. I think, they do it in Quebec, no big problem. They do it in the States, no big problem. I think we can change Ontario, too.
Well, I work in a place where repeatedly American visitors, as they come off the road and say there's a husband and wife and a couple of small children, the wife goes to the room with the two kids, the husband comes down and has a drink, and he wants to take a couple of drinks back to the room for his wife. I don't see anything wrong with this. It could be sold at the same price as you would sell it over the counter plus a bottle deposit, and it would be no skin off anybody's nose, and it would be a convenience, and we need these tourist and accommodation dollars.
Good point.
Okay, now, Len, you say you had another question?
No, I wondered what Mr. Peterson's attitude would be towards selling it over the bar.
You see, that they call that the, you know, number of provinces they do that, and that's one of the alternatives. We're going to review the entire distribution system for liquor and beer, and we're committed to the things that we said in the campaign, but I certainly an alternative that appeals to me in many regards.
Len, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Thanks, Len.
Radio 98, Jane, you're on the air with David Peterson.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, Jane, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good.
I'm a liberal supporter, and I supported Joan Smith.
You're wonderful. Thank you. Great choice.
Okay. And I have a question. I'm just wondering what's happening about the bill C-31 for the Native women.
That is a federal
matter, yeah.
Not a provincial bill. Now, as I understand it, Jane, I'm not authority on this. That is, I think it's got all party support. Wayne, am I right? And I think it's going to go through. I just can't tell you the timing on it, though.
I believe so, David, that it does have all party support, right? This is over the status Indian question, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because I lost my rights when I married my husband.
Yeah.
And,
I think it's going to go through, Jane. I just can't tell you the timing on it.
Because they promised that to us last April, and then May, and then now it's June, and, you know, it seems to me like it's never going to come.
It's most inequitable situation. I think Minister Dave Crombie, who's very sensitive to these matters and wants to move on.
Jane, apparently it'll be happening. We're not sure about the time frame. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Radio 98, Gord, you're on the air with David Peterson.
Morning, Wayne.
Hi, Gord.
Morning, Gord? Mr. Peterson.
That's not Gord Walker, is it?
No, it isn't.
Well, he listens.
You're on these open line shows, you know.
Mr. Peterson, I would like to ask you the difference between the NDP and the Liberals.
Well, it's quite obvious. They're socialists and we're not.
Oh, I see. Could you define that, please?
Well, they believe in nationalization. They believe in nationalizing the resource sector. A bunch of things that we just do not believe in.
Okay, so it's really a matter of degree then, because you obviously believe in regulations and...
Some I do, absolutely. If you ask me if I believe in more environmental regulations, the answer to your question, sir, is a very clear yes.
Okay.
You'll find even that Frank Miller agrees with that. I think the question you should be asking is what's the difference between Frank Miller and the socialists? Because Frank, the latest incarnation of Frank Miller, which I'm sure you're informed of these matters, you saw in the throne speech, he agreed with 99% of the things that we campaigned on. How do you explain that conversion?
Well, I think it's pressure from the radical left in the Conservative Party as well as within the other three parties itself.
Well, are you saying he doesn't believe it and he just sort of gave in, or what are you telling me?
Well, I think he did give in, yes, because it's pressure from...
Is that the kind of leadership that you think that party should exhibit?
Definitely not. Another question I'd like to get into is, if I started my own business and I am a young person, would I be able to offer my employees less than minimum wage?
The answer is no.
Why not?
Because there's minimum wage laws, and that's what they are. Minimum wage is minimum wage.
So it's completely arbitrary and subjective. So therefore...
It's not arbitrary. It's set by the government on discussion and consultation.
Well, they didn't consult me.
Well, they consult...
Just a little louder, please, David.
They consult through the public process, and members of parliament are elected to make decisions on your behalf. I'm sure you disagree with a lot of them. Obviously, you do. All then you can do then is try to get involved in the process and try to change it.
So if I'm accepting less than minimum wage, I'm breaking the law, even though I want to, and I'm willing to do it, and I make enough money, and I live on my own, I'm still not allowed to do it.
Are you, if you're a student, or a student, the student laws are, student minimum wages are less.
No, I'm not a student.
But there are minimum wage laws that pertain to those things, but there are part-time, provisions as well, but the answer is generally minimum wage is minimum wage.
So if I'm accepting it, in other words, I would be forced to become unemployed and take a UIC.
You may not qualify for UIC.
I see. So it's better to have me not working for less than minimum wage.
You're trying to lead me into a little sort of logical trap here, which is you're entitled to do, but I don't think that what you're saying to follow is logically. No, it's better to have you working. It's better to have you at a reasonable age. at a reasonable wage, and you're telling me that you worked at below minimum wage?
Yes, I wanted to accept it because it was the only job available at the time,
well,
since I am disabled also.
And?
So,
did they not hire you?
Yes, I accepted it less than minimum wage, though. So they did hire me.
And so what happened?
So I'm doing fine right now. Actually, doing better than I did, because since I did accept less than minimum wage, I was able to move up in the ladder.
That's terrific.
Gord, let's leave it there. I thank you for your call.
You're in touch with David Peterson and not much time. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Laura.
Hello.
Okay, let's move to somebody else then. Radio 98, Lynn, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Hi. I'm a student at UWO.
How are you?
And I'd like to know what your view is on this increased tuition fees for university.
I am against it. You're talking about the Bovey Commission report.
Right.
Which do two things. Dramatically cut accessibility, cut up to 11,000 spots in our universities.
Oh, I know.
And number two, dramatically increased tuition fees up to 50% over the next 2 or 3 years.
So what can we do?
Well, just the simple answer is throw Bovey in the garbage and don't follow his line of thought on the matter. I reject it, and I rejected it when it came out, and I reject it now. So we will not be doing that.
You won't be?
No.
Okay, because I'm really worried about this elitist attitude with universities now. I mean, you need a 75 average just to get in, and now the increased tuition fees. I mean, it makes it much more difficult for people to get to university now.
Education has been, in the history of this country, the route to equality, and I will fight to my death for an opportunity for every kid, regardless of income or background, to go through. Everybody's qualified to go through and have that education, have a chance to compete and make their own way in this increasingly complicated world. That's just fundamental to me, and we don't want to put extra barriers in their way. I do not want universities just to become the repository for the very, very bright or the very, very rich.
Right, and this is the trend that it seems to be taking.
No question, and I'm very much aware of the fierce competition now in universities. And that, look, life is tough. Life is competitive.
Right.
And the best are going to get in, but there should never be impediments on the basis of financial position.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear your viewpoint on that. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your call, Lynn. Radio 98, you're on the air, Laura. Hello. Boy, we're having trouble with them today, David. Go ahead, Bill. You're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to talk about this stadium in Toronto.
Yeah, just 60 seconds to do it.
Okay. What's your view on it?
I think it's a pretty good idea. I have a great number of concerns about it, but in general, I think a dome stadium would add a lot to Toronto. It's a world-class city. I think a lot of work's been done on it. One of our problems is all the details have not been aired publicly, and I make this pledge to you that you will know every single thing about it. And if it can't withstand public scrutiny, it's not going to fly. But I think it's a viable concept and would add a lot to the community.
Bill, thank you so much for your call. We're just out of time. David Peterson, again, much appreciation for taking time to be with us here on the hotline this morning for this hour. It's been very enlightening.
Wayne, I'm delighted. Anytime you want to do it, I hope you'll invite me back.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, David Peterson.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'll be back with a word about tomorrow's program. Father's Day.